and make sure children are wearing theirs. Stay sober, let others know where you are going, and be aware of the weather. Going on this weekend, the Bella Thalia Creative Arts Space presents A Taste of the Arts. There was a conversation on our morning show earlier this week with Andrew. I'm sure you can find that at our website. The tour is May 24th and 25th throughout Bemidji, Popaski, and the Turtle River areas. Visit several locations and see art installations, demonstrations, and celebrate culinary artists with a focus on fermented foods. There you
Which
go,
I was
Malachi.
Talking about. Yeah, yes. we also got to chat with them on the Monday morning show, and I really liked how
it was
they...
Monday.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. Okay. And I liked how they tied everything together. Like, there's going to be music and crafts and also food all at different places.
All at different places. You can check that out May 24th and 25th. It is time now for news from National Public Radio's Morning Edition here on KAXE.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The House of Representatives has passed the controversial government budget bill. It squeaked by with just one vote. Writing online, President Trump cheered the vote and urged the Senate to pass it. House Speaker Mike Johnson is hopeful.
All the senators, every one of them, have promised me they're not going to change anything in our bill. Reese, I was honored to be at the Senate Republican luncheon on Tuesday. And, you know, I encourage them to remember that we have a very delicate equilibrium that we reached on here. A lot of work went into this to find exactly the right balance. And you all saw how perilous that was over the last week as it developed.
But several senators have already signaled reservations about key elements of the plan. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office projects this bill will add well over $3 trillion to the national deficit. Democrats point to another CBO report that says the bill will balloon the national debt so much that mandatory spending cuts will be required in Medicare. They say the Medicare cuts could total $500 billion. The Trump administration has accepted a gift from the Qatari government. The Boeing 747 luxury jet is worth several $100 million. NPR's Kat Lonsdorf reports an Air Force spokesperson says the aircraft will be upgraded for use as Air Force One.
The spokesperson told NPR that the Department of Defense had instructed the Air Force to, quote, award a contract to modify a Boeing 747 aircraft for an executive airlift, saying further details are classified. They spoke on the condition of anonymity as they weren't authorized to speak publicly. Trump has suggested the plane could be converted quickly for use as a new Air Force One, but experts say it will likely require significant upgrades to meet the high security and communications requirements, work that could take several years and cost anywhere from several $100 million to $1 billion. Kat Lonsdorf, NPR News, Washington.
Police in Washington, D.C. say two staff members from the Israeli embassy were shot and killed in the city last night. The Israeli government identified the staffers as Yaron Leshinsky and Sarah Milgram. A suspect is in custody. NPR's Becky Sullivan reports D.C. police say the suspect said free Palestine when he was arrested.
The shooting took place shortly after 9 o'clock as a museum event hosted by a pro-Israel advocacy group, the American Jewish Committee, was coming to a close. Two people were killed, said Metropolitan Police Chief Pamela Smith.
The suspect was observed pacing back and forth outside of the museum. He approached a group of four people, produced a handgun, and opened fire, striking both of our decedents.
Police said they had tentatively identified the shooter as 30-year-old Elias Rodriguez of Chicago, said he was not previously known to police. American and Israeli officials alike condemned the shooting. An FBI official said it would be investigated for ties to terrorism or as a hate crime. Becky Sullivan, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News. Weather forecasters are warning that severe thunderstorms are possible today in the southern U.S. plains. The main threat is hail. Forecasters warn some hailstones could be 2 inches in diameter or even larger. Two-time Oscar winner Tom Hanks will appear off-Broadway next October in a new play that he co-authored. As Jeff London reports from New York, the play, This World of Tomorrow, is a time-traveling romance based on some of Hanks' short stories.
The Shed, an off-Broadway venue in Hudson Yards, the chic Far West Side neighborhood, has hosted some high-profile shows in recent years. Among them, Kenneth Branagh's adaptation of King Lear and Stephen Sondheim's final musical, Here We Are. Now, Tom Hanks will appear in the center's 550-seat theater in a show adapted from his stories about a scientist in the future who travels back to the 1939 New York World World's Fair to find love. Hanks is collaborating with writer James Glossman on the adaptation to be directed by Tony Award winner Kenny Leon. For NPR News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
Some artifacts associated with President Abraham Lincoln have been sold at auction in Chicago. These artifacts included the blood-stained leather gloves that Lincoln was wearing the night that he was assassinated. The money from the sale is being used to pay off an old loan that the Lincoln Presidential Foundation needed to settle. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Kauffman Foundation, providing access to opportunities that help people achieve financial stability, upward mobility, and economic prosperity regardless of race, gender, or geography. Kauffman.org.
You are listening to Morning Edition from National Public Radio here on People Powered Radio, KAXE. Thanks for joining us this morning. I'm Kari Hedlund with Malachi Coons.
Programming on KAXE is supported in part by the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. If you are hearing this message, you are most likely in a vehicle. And if you are not wearing a seatbelt, that could be tragic news. Buckle your seatbelt. It's the law.
Minnesota Discovery Center in Chisholm is having a spring cleaning garage sale this Saturday from 10 to 3 at their pavilion. They'll be selling supplies, fixtures, and furniture, cash or check only.
After Dark is our new Saturday night program after Green Cheese. It goes from 9 to midnight featuring styles of music like punk, metal, EDM, R&B, hip-hop, and more. This week's host, Kurt Randa, is going to be playing some heavy alternative rock. Are you interested in hosting? Email dgannon@kaxe.org.
Friends of Lake Bemidji State Park have a pancake breakfast on Sunday from 8 to 10 a.m. at the park's dining hall. You can help the environment by bringing your own plate and silverware. Do you have community events or live music events you'd like to get announced on KAXE? You can always text us at 218-326-1234. Here is more from Morning Edition on KAXE.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin, coming to you from Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul, Minnesota.
I'm A. Martinez in Culver City, California. House Republicans have approved a massive bill at the heart of President Trump's domestic agenda. Here's House Speaker Mike Johnson ahead of the vote this morning.
This is a historic moment that we will be talking to our children and our grandchildren about, and everyone will remember. America's back.
The bill would, among other things, extend President Trump's 2017 tax cuts before they expire at the end of the year and revamp immigration policy.
And if NPR's congressional correspondent, Claudia Grisales, has been following this. Claudia, how do we get to this place? Because there have been long negotiations and debates that went through the night.
Exactly. All through the night. And they just passed this massive tax and spending plan. It's quite the turnaround from just a few hours ago. They overcame a series of hurdles overnight, from GOP holdouts to fierce objections from Democrats, pushing this plan out of a House Rules Committee hearing that lasted more than 20 hours and a key procedural floor vote before the final passage. President Trump and House Speaker Mike Johnson may have pulled off what we've seen several times this year, another 1-2 punch of GOP holdouts, and to get them back in line. These fiscal conservatives or members of the House Freedom Caucus flipped to yes after an hours-long White House meeting with President Trump and Johnson yesterday, and in the end, it passed by just one vote.
Wow, by a whisker. All right, so yes. After this meeting, yeah, Republican leaders released an updated version of this plan. What's different about it now?
Right. They made tweaks to this plan to address concerns from holdouts that it could raise the deficit. But we should note this big bill kept a lot of its big provisions in place, such as extending the Trump tax plan, as we mentioned, major policy changes on immigration and energy, and campaign promises that Trump made, like no tax on tips. It also includes a major win for GOP supporters to raise the cap on state and local tax deductions. But those final tweaks to the bill to win over these holdouts included moving up new work requirements for Medicaid to next year and phasing out some energy tax credits. These changes, along with plans Johnson said would involve future presidential executive orders, got momentum back in leadership's favor.
Now, Democrats did try to delay the plan.
Right. Unlike House Freedom Caucus members, however, Democrats don't have much influence here. However, they slowed down the process as much as possible. That included leading a series of fiery arguments on the floor, raising concerns about plans to install these new Medicaid cuts that look to jeopardize coverage for millions of Americans.
All right. So Speaker Johnson wants to get this bill on track to the Senate by Memorial Day. What has to happen now?
So, right. This is a major step, but it is still a very long way to go to getting this to President Trump's desk, as Senate Republicans already have raised plenty of concerns about this bill. Senate Majority Leader John Thune is going to face a tough task threading the needle between this House plan and concerns from his own members. That includes fiscal hawks in that chamber, as well as moderates who have concerns about those Medicaid cuts. So they've already made clear they plan to make a lot of changes to this House bill.
That's NPR's Claudia Grisales. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Economists have been warning that President Trump's trade policy could lead to a recession. The administration's decision to pause most tariffs for 90 days and solid job market numbers tamped down those fears for a time. But now those fears have returned. Moody's downgraded the U.S. credit rating last week, and Congress is in the midst of budget negotiations that could add trillions to the national debt over the next decade. This has led to a sell-off of U.S. bonds, long considered a safe investment. So what does all this mean about the state of the economy? We're going to ask economist Jason Furman. He is a professor at Harvard, and he served as chair of the Council of Economic Advisors in the Obama administration. Good morning, Professor Furman. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with your sense of the health of the U.S. economy right now. What indicators are you looking at?
You know, so far, the real data, when you look at how many jobs there are, how much people are spending, that's quite good. When you look at people's plans and the plans that businesses have for the future, that's really quite bad.
So let me just ask you, sort of, we've been talking about the budget negotiations in Congress, and of course we've been covering the president's, you know, trade policy all along. So how much of the current uncertainty in the economy is a result of the president's trade policy, specifically tariffs? And then, of course, I want to ask you about those budget negotiations as well. So take the trade policy first.
Yeah, so we have had uncertainty, and economists have different ways of measuring it, at basically record levels, higher than during the financial crisis, higher than during COVID. That's come down some, but it remains very high. That's been almost entirely about trade. And last week, President Trump said that within a few weeks, he's going to reannounce the higher so-called reciprocal tariffs. People were very hopeful we'd reach a lot of trade deals. We did reach a deal with the UK, but deals with every other country have so far proved elusive.
And what about the budget negotiations in Congress? How are economists viewing those?
You know, to me, the worry there is more medium and long term. And that's really quite serious. So I don't want to belittle it. But things like this tend not to push you into recession in the way that the wild swings in tariff rates really risked a recession, especially if we had kept the higher tariff rates on. What things like this adding trillions of dollars to the debt do is they raise interest rates, they raise mortgage rates, they slow economic growth, but all of that plays out generally, historically, over a longer time scale.
So based on what we've just been talking about, how concerned are you about the risks of a possible recession? And if you can, if you feel comfortable with this, what would your timeline be for that analysis?
So, you know, recession is a binary thing. You either have one or you don't. Mm-hmm. I like to think of the economy more on a continuum. So, you know, if your temperature is 99.4 degrees, you probably have to go to school or work, but you're probably feeling pretty lousy. And that looks like we're on the equivalent of something more like that, maybe something like a 1% growth rate this year. That's not a full-blown recession. That's not a historic crisis that we'll remember. But that's basically every family having, you know, something like $2,000 less because of the combination of all of these. Moreover, coming out of it, we never fully get that back unless the trade policy returns to normal and we start to get our debt under control. So that just compounds over time. All that said, huge amount of uncertainty around what I just said.
So, you know, before we let you go, look, obviously how you look at all this depends on your situation, right? If you're close to retirement, if you're trying to get a job or maybe try to get a better job or if you're trying to buy a house. So it's very hard for you to give kind of one size fits all advice. But do you have some general words of wisdom for people who are worried about the economy right now, both in the near term and in maybe, say, the medium term?
Right. I mean, some things will affect everyone. You know, if you buy coffee, bananas, tea, just about anything, that's going to go up in price. When it comes to your retirement, you know, we've seen the stock market go up and down depending on what the president does. And when it comes to jobs, for most people, their jobs should be okay. But asking more certainty from the government would give everyone more certainty.
That is Jason Furman. He's an economist and professor at Harvard. He also served as chair of the Council of Economic Advisors in the Obama administration. Professor Furman, thank you so much for your time and these insights.
Thanks for having me.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. Have we got some news for you? The state of New York is doing away with allowing kids as young as 11 to deliver newspapers.
Like Newsies?
Kind of like that. Those kids on their bikes tossing freshly printed newspapers on the doorsteps in the early morning. Now, Newsies started delivering papers as early as 1833. That's according to the nonprofit Poynter Institute. Today, there are fewer papers to deliver as local publications scale back due to falling advertising revenue and also the prevalence of online news. The Local News Initiative reported last year that overall circulation has decreased by more than 60% since 2005.
Okay, so let's look back at this classic youth job.
I just had inky fingers basically for 2 years straight.
That's Mary Snyder. She is now a senior writer with On Milwaukee.
In the 1980s, 12-year-old Snyder and her friend were the only paper girls on the block delivering the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel both after school and on Sundays.
It was a seven-day-a-week job because 6 days a week, you had the afternoon paper, but then we also had the Sunday morning paper was the journal. So on Sunday mornings is when we had to get up at 4:30 in the morning, sub the papers and, you know, go deliver them.
Snyder says she made $20 a week.
Don Espanol's experience was a little more relaxed in Williams, West Virginia.
I was able to deliver any time of the day that I wanted. As long as someone got the paper that day, it was fine.
Now a developer for IT business apps, delivering papers was the first time he felt like a working person.
Right. I mean, yeah, having a paper route, a huge responsibility. You handle receipt books, hold bags of cash, sell subscriptions, and accomplish a set task every day.
Alicia Modestino is an expert in youth employment at Northeastern University.
It turns out when you talk to young people or survey them, one of the things that they develop over the summer, in addition to soft skills, is really good work habits.
But with a decline of iconic jobs, such as having a paper route, how are kids getting work experience after school and in the summer? Modestino says retail and restaurant jobs are popular among teens today, and many are even looking at jobs that can help them developmentally.
It's very common for young people to be doing overnight camps or internships or volunteering, other kinds of things that look good on a college resume.
So one chapter closes, another one opens, but don't forget babysitting. That's still around. This is NPR News.
And you're listening to National Public Radio right here on KAXE. I'm Kari Hedlund here with Malachi Coons. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. It is a lovely day. What's it going on where you're at? Text in 218-326-1234. We'd love to hear from you. We're shouting out volunteers. I got a huge list of folks that make KAXE possible. We're going to continue to celebrate them tonight at Kick It with KAXE. Maybe like DJ Wilder, who doesn't come on too often, but I always enjoy Grace's shows very much, kind of a newer one. Darren White as well, a little bit newer. Johnny Seven, DJ Dorsky, Todd Swenson. The list goes on. You'll hear more and more. They all put their time and efforts to bring you wonderful programming, whether it's Green Cheese, whether it's music. We've got folks who answer the phones for us, do all different types of events. And hopefully we'll be seeing many of their friendly faces tonight. We'd love to see yours as well with some live music. Molly Mayer, we just heard her not too long ago. Tegan Lexi and Woodblind and their new collaboration. It's going to be a blast. And looking forward to seeing you all. Let's celebrate KXC and kick off patio season.
That's right. And not to mention the volunteers that you hear every single week, like Jeff Sundin, who we heard from earlier this morning, Tornado Bob. We have a lot of really dedicated regular volunteers who take time out of their personal life to come and help us out by being a voice of the community, sharing their expertise. And we just want to give an extra thanks to all of those folks who help make KAXE what it is. We would not be what we are without these community members on our airwaves. And we just want to thank you so much for coming along that ride with us. If you have a shout out to a volunteer, text 218-326-1234.
We received support from Clocko Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, who are switching to summer hours starting on Memorial Day, May 26th. Open Monday through Saturday, noon to 8, Sunday from noon to 6. More info at clockobrewing.com.
We've been taking advantage of a lot of the birds throughout our area here at KAXE in the last few weeks. And at the Northland Arboretum, let me try that again, in Brainerd, they have bird hikes every Wednesday and Saturday morning during this month of May. Starts at 8 o'clock, binoculars provided, or you can bring your own. And Malachi, you and I were trying to spot this bird the other day.
Yes.
An oriole. And we have a set of binoculars. I was saying that I would like a monocle instead of binoculars.
Yeah. Why aren't monocles more?
Why is it just a pirate thing? Why is it not like
I agree.
A ubiquitous thing?
We should set up like have them around the office scopes. Because we've got a nice, we're looking down towards the river, and there is a little stand of trees in between the river and us here, and it's a great place for birds.
They
can be kind of hidden that they like there, but they can also go out over the river and haul in tremendous amounts of bugs, which there's a lot of bugs right now. So we have some good viewing here, and I think we should set up monocles. But maybe someone knows
why. Yeah, binoculars are like the go-to, but I find them very difficult. Like, there's always that. Like, I find them very difficult to see out of.
I know, yeah.
So why? Why are they so popular? Tell me.
I don't know. I can't. You're putting me on the spot here. You know, I would assume that it's... I got nothing.
Two is better than one. That's
two is better than one. I'm trying to think.
People
like,
think.
Yeah, like, when you use two eyes and without glasses in front of them and things, like, you have more depth perception with two eyes than with one. I don't know if that's the same with a
binocular.
Why do I keep saying monocle? It's not a monocle. It's
monocle. Isn't a monocle like a?
It's just one
the
glass.
The glass. The over the eye.
Yeah. Which isn't that popular anymore either. So everyone's kind of.
I have one of those, an old school one in a leather.
Monocle.
Leather.
What do you do with
it? Well, it's just kind of sitting out as like decoration because it's like my grandpa's like in a leather pouch.
Ooh. Okay.
It's
was a monocle wearer.
Very cool. I don't think so.
He also had it out just for decoration, too.
I never saw him wear one. So I'm actually not sure where it came from. Maybe it was a great grandpa.
Wow. This monocle has been passed down. And you should be the one who starts using it.
Dude, maybe I will. Maybe instead of reading glasses, I'll get out my monocle.
Yeah. When you're on stage tonight, I kick it with KXE announcing and you read your thing. Excuse me. Let me put my monocle on.
No, I think I'd have to hold it. I mean, or do you just scrunch your eye to keep it in place? How does that work? Wouldn't that be too close to your eyelashes, though?
Okay, let's think of who we know. The Peanut Man, he has a monocle.
Classic monocle.
Does it just sit on your face, or do you scrunch it?
I feel like you have to scrunch it in order to make it stay.
Yeah, right? The more you know. So usually like they're on a chain, right? They'd be on a chain, and then I see they pull them up. Maybe they hold them in place every time. You're right. They really seem impractical.
Oh, the penguin guy from Batman.
Did you look up famous people who use a monocle?
Monocle wearer.
The penguin from Batman. How does he wear it? Does it just sit there?
It just sits there. It's got a little chain that goes down the side. And everyone else here that I'm seeing
defying physics
is just letting it sit there, but they have to be scrunching their eye.
Okay.
I don't need more reasons to add more wrinkles to my eyes. So there we go. I think that's going to be it.
But when it comes to bird watching, I think having like a scope, like ship captains, you know?
Exactly.
They weren't using binoculars.
Exactly.
They were using things that unfurl, you know, they,
yeah.
What's that called?
They, a scope or yeah,
they,
whatever.
They like extend out.
I know what you mean.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to be getting this summer. It's one of those.
I hope Kyle's listening. For Kari's next birthday.
That's what I, an early one. So I can check out all the eagles and herons and all the fun stuff.
Yeah. What kind of birds are you seeing where you're at? Let us know. Text 218-326-1234. Yeah, there's a, what we're pretty sure is we're not bird experts, but there's very much a black and orange bird. And I know there, I've heard some orioles along here. So it was either
an oriole or what was the other one that you found?
It was a red start, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was far away. We couldn't quite make it out. And neither of us could operate the binoculars to really pull it into view.
Exactly.
It's kind of nice to operate with some mystery in your life. You know, I don't want to know what every bird is.
We don't need all the answers.
No.
You know?
There's an Iris DeMent song, you know, about mystery. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Love that song.
Yes.
Let the mystery be. Is that what it is? Yeah.
Hey, we're going to solve a mystery right now about our album of the week and play it.
What is it?
How about that segue?
There we go. You can't find this anywhere else.
The album of the week is Bhangra Rangila by Red Bharat. So the Bhangra is, it starts from a Punjabi folk dance and music from the Punjab region of India and Pakistan. And Bhangra is on my algorithm right now.
Okay.
It's showing up every place and I do not hate it at all. I, in fact, love it. And I love the dancing with it. I don't understand how their knees can handle it.
Is it one of those like the Russian folk dancing?
Yes, a little bit. Yeah. It taps into that a little bit. But it's so much fun. The energy behind this music is just like, I love it so much. It just makes you want to move. And they made an appearance on Coachella. Bhangra dancers made an appearance with Indo Warehouse, who's a DJ and actually appears on this album. So this Red Bharat is based in New York, in the Brooklyn area, led by Sunny Jain, who we've also covered here at KAXE. Sunny Jain is a Indian American drummer and jazz composer, sort of a pioneer within this South Asian jazz genre that's popping up. And we are going to hear a track right now, Child Baby, which was the name of an earlier release by Red Bharat. It's music that you hear only on KAXE, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. Text 218-326-1234.